Wednesday Nights Live with Tom Kerwin on Radio Yorkshire.
Yeah, good evening. This is Wednesday Night Live here on Radio Yorkshire. 2 hours where the focus is on football till 9 o'clock, and we want to hear from you tonight. Louis van Gaal's long ball rants, Nigel Pearson's touchline wrestling, and Luke Murphy's midfield swagger all under the spotlight tonight on the show. Plus, we'll be talking a little bit of non-league as well, club versus country, more music from our mystery season, and we'll also be discussing the promotion push of Guiseley in the Conference North with this man.
Alexander, ball through the Leeds defence. Parker's going to have to watch this from all the way under pressure from Henry. And he does well, Ben Parker, and he runs away with the football out of the penalty area, and he's too fast for Henry on the chase. Parker towards Beckford, little backheel down the line for Robinson. Robinson, onto Parker, who's continued his run. Driven across, ball goes in! Leeds back on terms! Luciano Becchio inside the six-yard box! And all the credit has to go to Ben Parker! He took the ball out of the penalty area!
Ben Parker. I don't know, does that bring you, is that a smile or a tear to your eye? That
I feel like that. I owe you £10 for giving me such a good intro there, mate.
Ben, it was all about you, that. Becchio just took all the glory, he just tapped it in. You did all the work.
He's made a living off that, I think, can't he?
There we go. Anyway, Ben Parker, how are you?
Not too bad, mate.
Good to see you back in the studio, first time this year.
Happy New Year.
No, we don't do that.
Happy Valentine's.
It's close to Valentine's.
As soon as it gets close to Valentine's Day, we don't do Happy New Year. And also in the studio, lifelong Leeds fans, Ben Scott. Ben, how are you?
Yeah, not bad. Cheers, Tom. Good, yeah.
Good. And Stephen Clark is with us as well. Stephen,
how are you? Evening.
Not bad, thank you.
Good. I mean, I imagine, you know, from a Leeds point of view, at the very least, some smiles on faces at the moment after last night's win.
Excellent stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot better this morning. It's always nice winning, isn't it?
A Tuesday night win away from home.
Gold kit.
Back-to-back away wins, gold kit.
After Saturday as well, you kind of went away thinking, oh no, not a midweek trip to Reading. You kind of felt the inevitable were going to happen.
Yeah.
So, we're nice and refreshing and just put a smile on everyone's face around the place, don't
it? Yeah, it certainly does. And the league table, although the gap is still the same between Leeds and the bottom three, it does look a lot more interesting, really, as far as the amount of teams that are in the relegation fight. Leeds taking on Millwall this weekend. We'll hear from Neil Redfern, too, after last night's victory against Reading. It's not only Leeds United, of course, that we will be discussing. We'll be looking at good week, bad week, some of the big issues and stories from the week in football. And also, looking a little bit deeper at some eye-watering figures from the latest TV deal in the Premier League, which we'll go into later, guys, but it's just staggering, isn't it? I mean, I got to Reading yesterday and got out the car just as they were announcing this deal, and everybody, I mean, even you have to look at Richard Scudamore, the chief executive of the Premier League, look at his face today on all the interviews. He cannot believe it, can he? They were expecting maybe close to £4 billion. But it's a 70% increase on that TV. That's remarkable, isn't it?
It's big money, yeah. I don't know whether they'd pay that to watch two injured Bens play here.
I couldn't afford that, Ben, mate.
It
depends on what channel we'll be bidding for that particular game. Bravo.
Yeah. No, it's money that you can't really... Serious, you can't comprehend that kind of money, can you? You know, it's unreal for me. It's...
I'm worried about my Sky bill coming through the post more than anything.
Someone's got to pay for that, haven't they?
Yeah. Exactly. I'm waiting for the big bill to come through saying, oh, we've increased your subscription fee. So I think that's the only way it's going to go about.
But let us know tonight what your thoughts are on that, how it's going to affect you as sort of a football consumer now, because that's what we do. We kind of consume a lot of football. So how it's going to affect you? Would you happily pay a little bit more to watch the football on the telly? Do you think that the money that has gone into the Premier League, should it filter down? Will it filter down? Do you think any of the sort of lower league clubs will see that grassroots? I mean, there's all talks of that. Or will something be done about ticket prices? Because now, and it has been the same for quite a while, the TV revenue is a bigger, you know, sort of source of income than gate receipts. And that's it's not been the case for the majority of time football has been going in this country, but it is now. So what should the clubs sort of do with that? So let us know your thoughts on that. Also, a couple of questions I want answering this evening. What was your sporting ambition growing up? Last week we were asking the guests in the studio who you were on the playground. So what player were you when you were playing football with your friends at school? But I want to know, what was your sporting ambition? Because I spoke to Sam Byram last night after he scored the second goal for Leeds, And he said one of his ambitions was to celebrate in the crowd, and he sort of ticked that off at a young age. So that was really, I just always dreamed running into a, you know, the away end at a football ground and celebrate with the fans. So he's managed to do that. And also, sports greatest loser. Jimmy White, any time I hear the sort of topic on this, Jimmy White's always the one from my childhood that I think about, because Jimmy White was never off the telly, and he rarely ever, and then everyone, it just became this long running joke with him. So, sports greatest loser, and I say that this week because of Avram Grant, who has lost another major football final on penalties. Serves him right for not dressing smart enough, in my mind. I'm not a man to talk on that front, but he was, he looked like he was on holiday.
He probably needed, though, to run away from the fans, because the semi-final, they were getting bombarded by bottles and what have you.
He probably thought, I need clothes with a bit of looseness here, just so I can get a bit of traction. Yeah, so sport's greatest loser. So what was your sporting ambition then? Ben, I might as well start with you. What was? And first of all, who were you in the playground?
Oh, I can't say.
It's okay, because I said I was Robbie Fowler. Robbie Fowler. Yeah.
Mine's worse than that. Leighton's going to hate me for this.
But you're going to admit it, aren't you?
I'm going to admit it. Harry Kewell.
Oh, that's all right.
He was class, though. He was brilliant.
You've got. There's two issues with Harry Kewell, and you've got to separate one from the other. And if you judge him as a player, he was brilliant.
Especially his early days at Leeds. Yeah. I thought he was fantastic. It was a similar type of position. I was like a left forward back in the day. That's when I had a bit about me, scoring goals, creating chances, bit of pace. He used to get my dad to buy him the same boots. I had Adidas, like purpley boots.
They were the ones Kewell had.
Yeah, right. With a tongue on. So he used to wear them. And that's when I peaked as well, same time as I went like 14. So when he left, I kind of went downhill. So I blame H for that.
That was a fantastic player. One thing with Harry Kewell is he never fulfilled that potential, did he? I remember talks of Juventus and £20 million bids and stuff when he was flying.
And Milan were after him, allegedly, as well.
He was untouchable, wasn't he?
Even then, £20 million were a lot of money, wasn't it? I do remember one saying, and our kid agreed with me, at one point he looked like one of the artist properties in Europe.
Yes.
He just two-footed, headed goals, tap-ins, long-range goals. He looked really good.
He could play up front, on the wing, couldn't he?
Yeah,
behind the striker.
Yeah, behind number 10 role. Yeah. He could do all, but he didn't fulfil it.
But I think he got a bad injury.
He did.
Came back, and I don't think he was the same. Then obviously went to Liverpool, didn't play as much. Mm. So I think that like hampered his chances of progressing to what it could have been.
It's a shame, really. Him and Bridges that season, he's qualified for the Champions. There's a partnership, you know, because I always remember David O'Leary signing Jason Wilcox, and I thought, well, what's he doing there? You've got one of the best left wingers in the Premier League, but he knew he could play Kewell up top with Michael, and they had they were a 40-plus goal partnership in the Premier League that year. So that's okay, Harry Kewell. What about you two? I'm going to ask you both who you were in the playground.
In the playground,
yeah,
I'm a bit older, so I was Kevin Keegan as a kid.
Right.
More England stuff.
You love the hair.
Oh well, yeah, I didn't have the hair now.
So you just suit a mullet there, wouldn't you?
The perm. What about you, Ben?
Goalkeepers, obviously Mervyn Day and John Lukic. Outside of that, Chris Woods, David Seaman, and I always imagined, you know, saving a penalty in an FA Cup final or something along them lines.
Were you always in goal at school when
pretty
you were
pretty much,
football?
Yeah. I always had this fascination.
I loved football at school, because it was always
You always needed a keeper, didn't you?
Yeah, you always needed a
keeper. Goalkeeping's always fascinating me, always. As like I said, like Chris Woods, Mervyn Day, right back to them days, David Seaman, people like that.
Who's the best goalkeeper you've seen? Who's the ultimate?
In flesh or just like on TV?
Just then, yeah.
That's a big call, is that? Buffon. Yeah, when you watch him, never seen him play, but when I sit and watch clips and I show them to my son so I can learn on YouTube, the guy's immense. He's
still the most expensive, isn't he? 30,
he's unbelievable.
Quid, wasn't he?
He's played for years at top level, and something serves him, makes, you know. Well, I couldn't do him with my legs at the minute.
So. I like his short sleeve shirt.
Yeah, short sleeved, and he's very vocal as well. I like that vocal side to it.
Okay, I'm going to ask that question every single week because I quite like that. So what was your sporting ambition then? This goes along the similar sort of lines as a youngster. Ben?
It was always to play for Leeds.
Play for Leeds.
Yeah. You just get
that's
kicked.
Pretty good that you've achieved that. That's
Oh, it's fun. It's fantastic. Yeah. Like, if like fans ask me, say, what's the feeling like? It's one you can't describe. Say, ask Leeds lads, how would you feel? It's like unbelievable feeling.
Yeah.
So
to
actually do it, it's like, it's great achievement.
I don't know whether you call it an ambition, but still at 34-year-old, and it's quite topical because at the minute, as every season, it gets a lot of stick. I've always, growing up, wanted to see Leeds win FA Cup at Wembley. Yeah. Always, and never have, and don't know if I will. But yeah, that's something I'd love to do. I'm maybe of that generation that grew up more with FA Cup, and I think it's a special cup. And to see your team lift it at Wembley, I think would be something, you know, I'd done something in my life seeing the team win at Wembley in FA Cup final.
More chance of that happening than Leeds winning the Premier League, which that's pretty fair to say, isn't it?
Yeah. My record at Wembley's pretty bad. I did say to I said to Lewis, we'll go watch Rhinos play someone really rubbish or England play San Marino, then I can just walk out of Wembley and say I've seen my team win.
Yeah, I've not got good memories of that place. I think the only time I get good memories is if I go see I've seen the odd concert there, and that was the only time I've left with a smile on my face. And even when I've been invited to go watch, or I've had the opportunity to go watch games that maybe I've, you know, he's kind of a neutral FA Cup semi-finals and things like that. I just can't bring myself to.
I don't think semi-finals should be at Wembley though.
No, they shouldn't.
Takes it all away. Even as a Leeds fan, if you went there in say April for a semi-final and you win it, but then you go back again, you'd be thinking, only 3-4 weeks ago, we got trained down and we've already done all this kind of thing. When you go to Wembley, you want it to be
something special.
Something you haven't done for at least 12 months for successful teams.
It's got to be not called New Wembley anymore. A bit like saying Happy New Year in February.
Yeah.
Can we stop calling it New Wembley now? Because I heard someone else say that the other day and I thought... That
it's 10-year old, isn't it, nearly?
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, what's your sporting ambition, Steve?
Mine was completely away from football. As a kid, I was a bit of a swimmer, so my ambition was to swim in the 88 or 92 Olympics, because that would have been my prime. Got an injury.
What was the event?
Well, that was probably one of the problems because I was a bit of an all-rounder, but I couldn't do the butterfly very well, so I would probably have done the individual medal if I could have nailed that, because I was all right at the other three.
Yeah.
But not, like, superb.
Right.
I mean, I swam at the sort of national championship level, under-10s and what have you.
But did you?
Yeah. I didn't win it all. I mean, I was, like, in the heats and stuff. Like, top 30 in the country at that age.
Yeah, that's pretty good, though.
That's really good. Looks like you're in training for Rio, though, with your Team GB top on tonight.
The ambition's still alive.
Still there.
Still burning.
Bad knees, though.
That's a bit.
I picked football. I got a knee injury, and it was you can't play football and swim. No. So because I enjoyed football more, even though I was crap at it.
Yeah,
I picked that.
Would you rather be sort of the best in the world at like a real minority sport that not many people are sort of that aware of, or, for example, play for England for like 10 minutes in a World Cup or something like that?
England every time.
I don't know, you'd want to consistently be best at something, wouldn't you?
If you're playing for England in a World Cup, you're a pretty good player, aren't you?
Yeah, forget that. That's a bad example. Yeah. Would you prefer to be rubbish at real mainstream sport, but you're still a professional, but you're really rubbish, but you're still a professional?
But
you could walk around the street and go, I am the world's best marble player, or like tiddlywinks,
bit best at something, I think. Bit world's best.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't matter what it is.
If you're best at something, you've achieved something in that field. So, yeah, enjoy your success.
See, I'm the world's best presenter of a radio show on a Wednesday between 7 and 9 from studios opposite Allen Road. I think that's a one-man competition.
I'll give you that.
LUTV's not too bad either, I've heard.
No, it's okay. It's all right. Best on that as well.
Yeah, buy into that, definitely, guys.
So that's it, best. There you go. I'll take that. Be the best at something that's
people. You'll give yourself a pat on back, Tom.
It's got a cough.
Someone's under weather.
You know, I was going to moan about this, but we spent last week in the studio. I had Jill was here, Bernard was here, and Richard was here. Richard, the Huddersfield fan, and we were all. It was embarrassing. We spent the first 10 minutes of the show moaning about how ill we were, and we got a barrage of emails. Will you stop moaning? I thought, yeah, it's probably not the best thing to do when people are sat at home, unless they're relaxing this evening.
I asked him on Saturday if we were all right. Oof, dear.
Half an hour later.
I've got to be a bit brave.
Man flu comes, though, we all know, don't we? This is terrible.
This is serious. This is beyond man flu. Honestly. Swear to God. Anyway, let us know your thoughts tonight on what your sporting ambition was. And also Sports Greatest Losers. Any of you got any nominations for this? I've sort of mentioned Jimmy White.
Well, I'd written Jimmy White down. The latest team, the 60s and 70s.
Eternal Brian.
Didn't win as much as they should have done.
And they all admit that, Stephen. They all say we should have had loads more medals.
Andy Murray.
Yeah.
And a bit off tangent, but Buffalo Bills, because they lost 4 Super Bowls on the trot in the 80s, 90s. So right. They were pretty poor.
Yeah, that's a bad loser. Andy Murray's a bit. You kind of think with Andy Murray, he's probably not going to, you know, in any other era, he'd be winning a lot more.
But there were always Sampras and. Yeah, but there wasn't
three others. I suppose there's quite a few, you know. Anyway, what about you, Ben?
I follow Michael Ballack. He always seems to lose Champions League finals
and
World Cup. He never won medals like that. No. Great player, wasn't he? And he's one play for great teams, but he can, the he big was, finals.
And he was in that Germany team when they weren't very good, were they? Just before they started to.
So he just missed, just obviously missed out on the, like I say, great German team at the moment.
And so. I've got no sympathy for him. One, because he played for Chelsea, but two, when Chelsea signed him, I think he was like the biggest earner. And they were saying it was like £170,000 a week or something. Then he moaned that he couldn't find anywhere to live. He couldn't afford anywhere in London. Said it's too expensive.
Oh, as soon as I feel sorry for him now, actually. Yeah.
That's it, forget it. What about you, Ben? Any sports
players? Maybe Dutch national team from my lifetime, my era. Yeah. Because they've always... Spain got over that and finally started winning in major tournaments. But Dutch have always had fantastic players and they just never fulfil it when it comes to tournaments for various reasons.
And there's a few football clubs probably like that as well in this country that you kind of think, are they ever going to achieve anything ever again? Like ever, you know, like I suppose I'm looking at teams now in the Premier League and you think... There's probably quite a few, and I don't know where.
Villa,
first one I thought of.
Villa, European champions, you know, they've champions of this country. Massive football club, great. One of my favourite stadiums in the country is Villa Park.
When you look back, when Leeds went back into old Division One, Villa were a major force. Yeah. Then for first till about, well, they probably went down after they beat us in cup final, maybe in '96. Yeah. But you know, they're a big outfit of Villa. It's quite tragic, really.
It's always been a classic argument between me and my mates when we've had a few pints. Who's the bigger club, Leeds or Villa?
Yeah.
And what then? What's the verdict?
Yeah. It depends on who's talking. Some say Villa because they've won the European Cup.
Yeah.
But some say Leeds because of the fan base and
one club city. Yeah. And all of that. It's always an interesting debate. I like that. We did. What did we do? I think we did Spurs and Newcastle.
I think Spurs are miles bigger than Newcastle.
Newcastle haven't won out for about
the fan base of Newcastle. Fan base, it is a big club.
I know, but you can't dine out on how many fans you've got, can you?
That's where the great debate about what a big club is, and it's an eternal debate because it's what you hold as the most important thing. Because some will always say trophies, some will always say fan base, some talk about potential, stadium.
For me, Tom, Spurs are bigger than Newcastle, because they're in London, but if Spurs want to buy a player, not only because they're in London, but they'll go to Spurs instead of Newcastle because they'll say to their agent, have this lot ever won now? And they'll go, maybe a fair while ago, but they won League Cup final, they have won FA Cup, played in Europe, blah, blah, blah. I think Spurs.
And if you go on the trophies argument, obviously Yorkshire's club with their three in a row.
Yes.
Are the bigger club in Yorkshire.
Well, that's true. And that's an argument I've had quite a few times with various relatives. But we'll go into that. Anyway, good week, bad week will come up very shortly. As I say, your sporting ambition. Really want to know that tonight because I know people have probably had a failed dreams or dreams that are still alive. Is that fire still burning? For you to compete in the Olympics at something or other. I mean, there's always chance if you wanted to sort of compete in some sort of world event, you could sort of, even at any age, you could get yourself into something, couldn't you? Sort of world, you know, cheese rolling championships.
I saw someone on TV the other day that took me with my legs at a minute. It's walk football.
Yes, I've seen that.
Have you seen it?
You've got to be over 60, though, criteria.
Well, I'm actually glad you've said that.
But it's at national level.
Yeah, I'm a long way off that than that.
I always look at darts and think, I could do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, darts and snooker, okay? So my boy is nearly 1 year old, and someone said to me, oh, is he going to be a footballer? I said, with my genes, absolutely no chance. But I thought, I'm going to get him into some kind of sport. And I'm of the opinion that darts and snooker in particular, if you practice, and get them right from a young age, if he's holding a snooker cue, I'd probably go for darts because darts
snooker
on the
snooker seems a bit more difficult.
Yeah, I think it is.
Massive amount.
It's
just practice. Yeah. It's just dedication.
I think
Phil Taylor, he'll say he spends 8 hours on his board at home. It's a pretty easy job,
routine,
really,
isn't
think
it?
About it.
And then dealing with the pressures of a massive audience. So. It was funny this week, actually, the darts, because I know a few people have gone to the Premier League darts at the Leeds Arena. Great atmosphere. But some of the darts journalists and people who sort of follow the PDC around the country, around the world, had tweeted the venues of the Premier League darts from 2005... Yeah. When it kind of first started, and it was all these leisure centres. It was like Hackney Leisure Centre, Putney Leisure Centre.
The Dome had it in Doncaster.
Yeah, the Dome had it. So, you know, in front of like 200 people, and then you're watching like thousands of people. Darts is, you know, it's unbelievable, a massive success story. So,
Wednesday nights live with Tom Kerwin on Radio Yorkshire.
A feature on the show where, well, it's pretty simple to explain, isn't it? We look at who's had a good week, who's had a bad week in the world of football. Let's start with a good week. It's a good week for Premier League clubs, players and agents, maybe not so for fans. The new Premier League deal was announced, over £5 billion it is worth. Sky and BT have won the rights to show Premier League football for the next round of games, the next round of fixtures. We mentioned this briefly at the top of the show, and I don't know how you're sort of feeling it. As football fans, how are we sort of feeling about the money that's there? Because it has leapt up that much, and I don't know any other business where things with the product's exactly the same, yet the wealth of it, the money that's paid to show it goes up 70%.
We were just saying, though, it's like market forces. It sells and sells, and sometimes products pass some seasons, but people still buy it. So however you can sell some, and people are going to pay good money for it, en masse, you've got power to keep putting price up, and it'll just go on and continue like that forever until... But no one in this country is going to stop watching football either. Mm. People will still find the money to pay whichever digital TV company
use. I think the problem will be when the product gets diluted, because if ticket prices stay as they are, then people aren't going to bother going because it's cheaper to watch it at home.
That's a possibility.
I mean, look at that Blackburn game on the Waking Cup, and there were about 5,000 there.
Yeah. That were awful, that, right?
But the other thing that's amazing is it's gone up that much. I don't understand why. I don't understand... With what BT have paid nearly $1 billion and Sky have paid nearly over four billion, I don't understand why it's gone up so much. And I don't know whether BT had blew Sky out of the water for Champions League rights. And I don't know whether Sky thought, well, we're going to blow you out of the water too. But surely they could have come to some kind of arrangement between them and thought, well, why are we handing over so much money? It just seems a bit ridiculous, doesn't it? I know there was reports of other sort of TV companies' interest, like beIN Sports and the Discovery Network and things like that, people are interested in it, but it just seems amazing that it's gone up that much money.
Sky, nothing without football, are they? So they've got to have that, because otherwise nobody would buy it.
One thing for Sky is they've never disclosed of their, roughly they've got about 10 million subscribers in the country, or 10 million households have Sky TV. They've never disclosed how many of them subscribe to Sky Sports, how many of them pay extra. And I suppose we can read into probably it's quite a few, given the fact that... They've paid so much for it, but I don't know for yourselves, because you know we're Leeds United fans, so you know we're supporting a Championship side at the moment, and there is some live games, of course, Championship games on Sky. But as far as the Premier League, is it absolutely essential to you three that you've got it, that you can watch it? Do you enjoy watching it?
Sky Sports, because my son wants to watch a lot of different sports, and I think it's beneficial for him to watch and learn, not just football as well. I don't want to isolate him to football. I can just at the minute afford to pay for it, but I got to a point now where I was just saying to Ben and Stephen, I'm making watch it now, because I'm thinking, I'm paying a lot of money for this. It's actually quite a luxury to pay that much money for a sports package. So we do watch a lot more than maybe you're interested in, to try and get some kind of value out of it.
I think Sky is a general sort of Sky Sports. It's got a wide variety of sports on it. You've got your golf, your rugby, tennis,
big
now
on the darts, cricket.
So I think a lot of that is covered with Sky, but obviously paying this much just purely in your Premier League football is a massive amount of money just to spend purely on Premier League football. And I worry for the teams not getting into the Premier League now. There's going to be such a massive gap. You think gap now is big, don't we?
Yeah.
But the gap from the next 3 years onwards, it's going to just grow and grow and grow.
Yeah.
If you don't get into that Premier, if you get relegated, you don't get straight back into it. I think there's going to be more teams in administration. There's going to be more teams.
You think they're going to be chasing
the dream more because
whenever you dangle a carrot, nature of human being is to try and grab it, and they'll try and grab it. And clubs, clubs will aggressively go for it and fail. Mm.
When you look at somebody like Bournemouth, who are willing to pay £5 million for a player.
Transferring
it. Bournemouth. Yeah, I know. Like, you just say, well, if the team comes at bottom of the Premier League under the new deal, they stand to get
100 million pounds
for finishing bottom of the table.
That doesn't include your extra sponsorship of being in the Premier League that you can generate. You know, if Leeds get promoted to the Premier League, businesses from all over the place will suddenly want to be handing over cash because the exposure is so big. And the Premier League's big strength is its unity, isn't it? In other countries, there was talk, I mean, everyone on Twitter was dissecting the figures and turning it into sort of unique stats that, you know, sort of made your eyes water, really. That Hull, for example, would be earning twice the amount Bayern Munich do from TV rights. But in other countries, the clubs sell their own rights. And when the Premier League was formed, they knew their big strength was going to be all about being united, wasn't it? And nobody breaking away. And one thing you've got to give the Premier League credit for, they've never let anyone break up. I mean, I think Manchester United late 90s were thinking, well, hold on.
Yeah, they're
you know, we're bringing in quite a lot of the cash here and the interest. We're the successful side. We'll move on. But they've done extremely well. And I don't know how you feel, we'll probably go into it a bit later, but I don't know how you feel about sort of the calls today now. Well, it's obscene amounts. When it is obscene, But it's business, and Richard Scudamore probably quite rightly has said, "We're a business. We're not a charity. We don't have to." You know, but there's a lot of calls today. You should hand over, I don't know, 300 million for grassroots. And they do. They know the Premier League do put money into grassroots projects. But I don't know how you feel about the money, the extra money, and what clubs maybe should do with it, or should there be something done with it? Or
I think it should go towards something like the fans for tickets, at least lower the price for us, or do like special deals where some nights you might get let kids in for example, if they're accompanied by an adult, stuff like that, which gets more people in. Because like I say, if it's easier to watch, cheaper to watch it at home, people are going to be paying more to watch these more games on your Sky.
There'll be people that have Man United fans that have never been to Old Trafford and have never got any intention of going to Old Trafford,
Sky,
but they'll probably
fans.
Watch them every single game because they're on the TV every week near enough. Or you can watch their game every week because football first on a Saturday night, you get the full 90 minutes.
Exactly,
so you never even have to go to a football ground. There'll be kids that grow up that will never ever go to a game.
Which is sad, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
It's sad. It's all about going to a match, isn't it? On a Saturday and Tuesday.
My kids don't watch football on telly, but my son comes here every week because he loves being at a ground. And if kids don't know what it's like to come to a game,
yeah,
and all they know about is special there, aren't you?
Do you think? You know, as parents and everything, do you feel that? The cost of football, the cost of tickets, is the biggest. It's the biggest sort of challenge, and if anything could be done to bring that down.
We Tom, we said it is a big problem, and football clubs have got a lot of money now, as we were saying. But in an ideal world, you'd like to see it get passed down to like where Ben is now at Guys. Yeah. You'd like to see it get passed to grassroots where my lad plays. But also, in a sense, if we detach ourselves, we're kind of saying to someone else what they should do with their money, and if we're our money, our personal salary. You might appreciate someone else saying, give something there. You know, you'll give odd fiver to charity or whatever and do something for charity yourself. So it's kind of maybe a bit, I don't know, envious. It's not for us really to say, sadly. Will they do the right thing morally? Who knows? You'd like to think they'd give it all back to help conference football, to help grassroots kids, generations to come, but...
But that's where I'm a bit uneasy with the calls today from people saying, well, they've got to give something back. And you think, it is. It's way too much money. And they could do... Each club from that new TV deal could easily donate 10 million quid. I mean, into a pot. Yeah. And they wouldn't really miss it that much. But why should they? It's not their fault that Sky have handed over all that.
I think Accrington tweeted today that one game in the new deal, I think they get £10 million it's costing Sky in it per game.
Per game, yeah.
Accrington said that would pay their wage bill for 20 years.
In another sense, the bigger picture we're kind of alluding towards here is that a little bit of that money, where obviously I follow Geisley as well, and Ben's lads have hardly had a game, you know, at home or anywhere now for a long time. They've hardly kicked a ball.
Yeah.
It's the same under eights for my son. They've had two games since like November or something.
Yeah.
You know, so it wouldn't take a lot of that money to make a big difference outside at Premier League and improve football in country as a whole.
It'd be nice for clubs to maybe put it into their own local area and they'd reap the benefit then of players coming through.
Wednesday Night Live on Radio Yorkshire.
Things going very well at Leeds United, of course, at the moment. After that defeat on Saturday against Brentford, Leeds United bounced back in perfect style with a 2-0 victory at the Medeski Stadium. Their first ever win at the Medeski Stadium for Leeds United last night. 2-0, second half goals from Luke Murphy and Sam Byram gave Leeds United all 3 points. This is what Leeds United's head coach Neil Redfern had to say after the game.
We worked hard to stop balls coming in the box and we got his body in the way to block shots. But the second half, I thought we broke things up really, really well. I thought the two centre-backs in particular balanced and covered off one another and pinched and intercepted really well. And it got us up the pitch.
You lost Bianchi early on. Looked like an unfortunate incident. What's the problem there?
Yeah, obviously it was a 50-50 tackle. You know, both players have gone in brave. I don't think there's any malice in it. But obviously I think Thomas has opened up his ACL a little bit. So we'll have to see how that settles down. You know, it's come at a time when, you know, we've got two or three people out, you know, and it's adding to what we've got. And, you know, apart from maybe two or three others that were left behind at Thorpe Arch, you know, that's all we've got now. You know, we forget we've let a lot of players go. So, you know, we've whittled the squad down. But the boys that came in have done brilliant.
You put them in cotton wool now, you've got a big game, eh? I know you're not long to dwell on this win. You've got to look forward, haven't you?
Yeah, exactly. And the lads have got to look forward to these games that are coming now. It's a great game for us to play, you know, on Saturday against Millwall. They've had a good result tonight. But we put a bit of distance now between ourselves and the bottom.
And you know, we're playing well. You know, we know full well. There's a lot of football to play. And the pleasing thing from my point of view is we're in a position now where we know we can go into most games now and compete. You know, we're a match, if not better than most sides we're coming across now. And it's a good feeling.
Are you surprised how quickly you've managed to turn it round?
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing is it's tough. You know what I mean? And sometimes when you've got to stand up and say, you know, I can see it getting better, and you know, it's difficult for people to see. And but you know, you've got belief in your people. You know, you've got belief in your players, and I think that is important for any player. You know, if the guy in charge has got belief in them, you know, it gives them that impetus to go on and perform. And you know, you can see that today, that the boys have really got the bit between the teeth.
2,600. Better not forget the two as well, have made it down. You send them home very, very happy tonight.
Yeah, they were brilliant again, weren't they? You know what I mean? They sing and they chant, and you know, they've got humour as well. You know, they're good. You know, and they've got behind us again today, and you know, it's really pleasing to be able to give them something to cheer about, and they really enjoy themselves tonight. You can see that.
A long trip on for you guys, but a nice one. You know, 3 points in the bank.
Exactly, mate. It makes it a much better trip when you win.
Neil Redfern there talking to Mark Wilson after last night's game. Key phrase there last night. Neil Redfern there talking about how his players enjoyed it, the Leeds fans enjoyed it. I would probably put it as one of the best away performances I've seen from a Leeds United side for a long, long time. Against, I wouldn't say they were great Reading, but you know, they're a side full of stars and players, you know, with
how
high market value and top earners.
Play that well away from home. Bournemouth 1-3-1.
But Bournemouth was a sort of freak game. Yeah, it was a sort of help, you know, harem scarum game where anything could have happened. Whereas I thought as an away team, and I love what if I could only ever see Leeds United play home or away in the future, I'd probably pick away games. Certainly from a winning point of view, when they win, there's nothing better. And I just thought the game plan was perfect. First 20 minutes, they said, "What have you got?" And Ben, you'll know about this. This is what managers say. You're away from home. Just see what they've got for 15, 20 minutes. And then Brentford did it at Elland Road on Saturday. They had 20 minutes where they went, "Right, we'll see what you've got." And then bang, they step
Wigan
it
did
up.
It.
Yeah.
Because he said after the game, didn't he, Malcolm?
Yeah, he waited and then the pitch was off, didn't they?
But I just thought it had a bit of everything, and you kind of think at the moment there's a bit of a steal about this Leeds United side, isn't there? There's a bit of resilience, and I think people thought we'd win on Saturday against Brentford and probably thought Reading were maybe a draw at best, but you know, they got 3 points away from home, so I don't know how impressed you guys were with...
It shows a resilience, and I think that leads on to bigger things. It's a people in squad and team that are playing at the minute that have helped Redfern build that unity and that cohesion that's making us good. You can't go to Reading and win 2-0 and it be a fluke for me. You just can't, really.
Clean sheets in this league,
you know,
as well.
Exactly.
Rare, yeah.
You don't go to Reading and win 2-0 unless you're playing as a team, you're playing for each other, and you've got a little bit of quality in there. So I don't think anyone can take away from that. And that result last night kind of encapsulated how we've played since the turn of calendar year. You know, yeah, we were a bit unlucky on Saturday against Brentford. Not in bigger picture, despite controversy with match officials, is losing 1-0 against Brentford that bigger upset? No, probably not
in the context of the games around it. You know,
over the course of the season, it probably won't be for Leeds United, where two teams will finish. But last night, yeah, we're a good marker to put down for people to know that we have kicked on a bit from back end of last year.
You must be delighted, Ben, watching and seeing the results, and Neil Redfern as well. He's found a formula. There are four academy graduates in the starting lineup at the moment, and to win away from home in any division is tough, isn't it? But I suppose, you know, to get the first one at the Medeski 2-0.
I think he's proved a lot of doubters wrong. I think people looking from the outside in might be looking at Leeds with like where Red has not been tested at this level, the players is bringing in, the academy players not tested at this level. There might be a bit of a soft touch, but I think, I've just said, the last few games have proven what a bit of a steal we've got throughout the team. I think, like saying, going to like Reading, it's not a fluke that you go there and you put a good win down 2-0 away from home. I just think the players have responded well to Redders. Also, I think Steve Thompson coming in has been been a massive help. People might not think how much of a help having actually a number two with your coach. You think your manager should do all the work, but that's not how modern day football works. For most of my time being at professional clubs, we've had a manager, a first team coach, an assistant coach, your goalkeeper coach. So that's four people there where you can work specific on things, whether the manager wants to take the defenders to one side, the attackers, and the other coaches work with different sections of your team. If you can do extra work with your individual areas with the team and gel it all together, you become a better team. And I think that's what's happened. I think the results have been a fruition of hard work on the training pitch.
And how important is as a player, Ben, is a system? Because Leeds have got this formation that Neil Redfern put out against Sunderland in the Cup, this 4-2-3-1 system. The players seem to suit it. There's maybe a little bit of an issue on the left side. It's a bit lopsided, but I don't know how important you're playing the game, how important the system is that the players feel comfortable in it, or if you think, well, you've got good players playing well, does it really matter?
I think also you've got to be comfortable with the manager's got to be comfortable with the formation. Knowing Redders, whenever I play the reserve games under him, he's always played that formation. And us as players, we responded to it well. We did well under him. The academy lads, I think they played that formation. And when Redders first got the job, I think whether someone above telling him or whatever to play this diamond formation, or whether you're just trying to please people, that's what he stuck with. And I think it came a point, I think it might have been after the Derby away performance, because that were a bit of a shambles, all to speak. And I think it came to a point where Redders may be firm and say, look, I think this is the way we should go. And I think everyone I've seen responded well to it, because it is the best way. It is hard at home, because it tries to pull that extra striker in, and it doesn't seem to work as much. I think Redders should just stick with this formation as he's done from away from home, wherever his best performances, because it's trying to play people, like I say, round peg square holes, whatever. But I can see where he's trying to do with the home thing, but his best performance I've been away from home using that formation.
And the one time he has changed it a little bit, Leeds have lost this year in 2015. Stephen, I guess you think everything's sort of clicking at the moment? I don't know what you think.
Yeah, we spoke about it before we actually came on air, that just that second half at Sunderland, since then, it's like he probably has said, right, we're doing it my way now.
Yeah.
And he's got the people in that he trusts, that he wants in there, and they're playing the way that he wants to play.
Yeah. The other factor as well, of course, in this run of results is players that have come back from the Cup, players that I would guess, Ben, Stephen, I don't know, you.
Sorry, Sven, I think Stephen made a really good point then. He used the word trust.
Yeah.
And I think, and Benel Knox has played at a high level of football, Redfern's got a team now, people that trust each other through relationships on and off at pitch, and I think that's been a massive part. If you can trust your centre-back pair, and if there's a full-back, you can trust your winger, you know, that kind of thing. And you're trusting in your manager as well, and you're trusting in your assistant manager. It comes together on a Tuesday and a Saturday, and results come from that. So, yeah, I think trust's a massive part of it.
Leeds got a result as well last night without their captain, Liam Cooper, who's been arguably the best defender this year, best centre-back. Roloff Austin as well has been important for what he brings to the side. And Murphy and Byram getting goals. I must say, to bring players back from the cold like Murphy, Wootton and Steve Morrison, when many Leeds fans thought you'd never see them again in a Leeds shirt, it's pretty remarkable, Ben, isn't it? I mean, the players deserve huge credit, because ultimately it's the players going out and performing.
Yeah.
But obviously Neil Redfern, Steve Thompson, they've done something with those players to get the confidence back, to get them coming in and firing.
Well, I think Redders treats players just with respect. Don't treat them as footballers, but treats them just like normal blokes, really. He'll still speak to them, where I've come across people like managers who don't want a player at the club. They'll just blank them in the corridor or around the dinner table. They won't speak to them whatsoever, but Redders won't be like that. He'd speak to people, he'll take them on face value. And it shows, like you say, he's been able to bring these people out from the cold, where they might have might have just been totally blanked by other people. But Redders, like I say, is a man's man. He'll speak to you how you expect to be spoken, and he's brought him in, and like saying, the players now trust Redders, and it's a great feeling to have, because not only you're getting trust from players, you're getting trust from senior players as well. It's not only young kids, it's your Morrisons, your Murphys, people who have been around the game for quite a few years. And if the young lads can see the likes of them players having this trust in sort of their manager, you rub off onto the young lads, and when they're coming through, they're seeing the senior players do that. It'll help them as well, and it'll start to rub off throughout the squad.
Because it could be very easy for players like Morrison and Murphy to just go, it hasn't worked, I'll pick up my wage and I'll come to training.
But that's good man management, isn't it? Because Neil said, I don't think it's any secret, that he had a good chat with Luke just before Christmas, and he said, you know, you're in trouble here, kind of thing, your footballing career's not going as it should have done for a while now. and they talked everything through. It's given him a chance, and I think an honest person, as Luke is rewarded. That chance has been given. You know, he's had a second bite at cherry. He's been given it, and he's knuckled down, and he's proving people that he can still play good football. And he will want to do it because he's been offered that chance, hasn't he? Neil said to him, I believe in you, son. You know, you can do something at this club still. So that, for Luke, when he's out at picture, big time, that's going to make him feel good, isn't it? Yeah. And he's going to get a confidence in his stride again.
I think when someone's giving you a chance
and believes in you, it's a good thing in any sector of life, isn't it?
And when you pay £1 million for somebody, I think sometimes clubs throw players away too quickly. Do you know what I mean? I know Murphy had a good, you know, pretty much played nearly every game last season, and he didn't pull up any trees, but I think it's too easy for clubs to go, right, it hasn't worked, see you later, we'll write that off as a loss and a mistake. But
it's like you were talking about the Sky deal earlier on, why did they disclose it? Why did Leeds disclose that we'd paid £1 million for Luke Murphy last year? Because GFH wanted to show the fans.
We're
putting some money. Yeah. And that put him instantly under pressure, and everybody expected him to come in. Look at what he's done for Crewe, and he's been this world-beating midfielder in League One, and he can pass the ball, and he's all this. And it didn't work for him last year, but I always had a bit of faith. The crowd were on his back as soon as he made one mistake. That was it. The crowd were on his back straight away, and they've sort of he's worked through that this time, and he's
which shows good character, doesn't it? You know, fair play to him.
Yeah, sheer hard working and getting to know. I've got to know Luke a little bit, and he's really got his head down and focused now.
Yeah, he's really good to see someone come back out of that. Because often at a big club like Leeds, too often we see they just can't do it. You know, and there's several factors. Probably managers, as Ben said, sometimes if a manager wants a player out and he ain't treating him as a human being, an individual, obviously a player then will just think, nah, not for me. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Talk to my agent and I'll get somewhere else. Because it can be, as we say every week, it's a hard club to play for at times. It's a big club still. Do you know what I mean? A lot of expectations.
Big expectation. And also with Luke Murphy, the build-up to the second goal, you know, he's winning the ball in the halfway line, making the tackle, which I think is a part of his game that's probably not really talked about. People talking about being sort of a ball
player. I think
player.
Fans are enjoying this as well, Tom, seeing the resurgence of outcasted people in autumn. I think fans are really enjoying now.
I think it shows to you, don't it, that the people are willing to try hard.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But that's all, I think, Leeds fans in particular, that's all we're asking it. We want to see the players out there.
Anybody asks, so if they're giving 100%, but you don't come off, you can hold your hands up, you can say that, a bad day at office. Yeah. But if you don't show that commitment, or not willing to show it, don't come across that way,
then
when you start questioning the players' attitude and what.
Which brings us perfectly onto Steve Morrison, because I thought Morrison played really well last night. He sets up Byron for his goal, but he missed, you know, he hit the post first half. And I just wonder, as fans, what are you thinking about Steve Morrison? Because he's not scoring, which ultimately he's there to do in the team, but his link-up play, I think his all-round play is really important
to the
team.
He's in right place at right time. That's the thing, isn't it?
He's getting chances. He's missing them. But what I'm saying is, at what point do you think, well, no, Steve, you've got to start putting the ball in the back of the net at some point?
If you win it, it doesn't matter, does it?
Exactly.
If he's creating for other people, then you're not bothered.
Yeah.
The old argument, what did Beckford do at times?
Yeah.
You know, he just scored an odd goal and a lot of time looked pretty casual about life, but he did essentially what he had to do at times. And if Morrison's role is build up play and team play, not just be a goal scorer, I don't think Redfern and Steve Thompson will look too deeply, as some fans do, and think, oh, we haven't scored for four games or whatever.
But he's really winning over that. I think he's won me over massively.
Yeah, because as we just said, then that's how we want as Leeds fans. It's all I ever want, application. If you try the best and they're not good enough, well, in any sport, that's life, isn't it? But he's trying, and I think while someone's trying in a Leeds shirt, fans will hopefully be.
And another guy who came in with a big burden on his shoulders because he's replacing Becchio. And Warnock said he's going to be a legend for this club. I mean, you're putting the guy under immense pressure straight away. And because it didn't work out straight away, again, the fans are on his back.
Obviously, I think ideal situation is Leeds are winning, Morrison starts scoring. That's your ideal scenario. But for the person who's playing that lone striker role, is Morrison the best we've got at the club at the moment?
Yeah.
I think,
yeah.
That's why he's playing. So you'd rather have him to occupy your centre half, so you can have your likes of your Cooks, your Moats, your Byrons. They can like occupy their job, concentrate on their job instead of trying to help influence the striker, give him an extra hand. So I think as we're speaking now, I think Morrison's the right way to go because probably not scoring, but Leeds are winning and he's contributing to the wins at the moment.
I know, and it sounds strange to say, but he's missing every game. But I like what I mean by that is he's getting into chances.
Yeah,
he's getting,
at least it's there.
He's getting. Right, I mean, he did everything brilliantly last night for his chance at a post. Did everything spot on. Obviously, the big thing is he's hitting the target. Didn't manage to do it, but. You kind of seen other players at this club who haven't been scoring goals. You think Noel Hunt barely ever had any chances. But at least Steve Morrison's getting into those positions. By the way, talking about Jermaine Beckford, someone sent me a link, someone on YouTube, there's every Beckford goal for Leeds on a video. Don't do it now, stay listening to us. You can put it on now and while we're talking, but my word, I completely forgotten some of the goals he scored. I completely forgot how good they were. Because they're all a bit of a blur to me now. You know, it's a few years on. And I just remember him scoring some great goals. But when you see them all back, it's about 8-9 minutes every goal. It's absolutely amazing.
Right, Trickwood Parker scored as well. That was pretty decent.
Tom, take away.
I'm trying to take glory off my morning.
Yeah, there's a vine of all Ben Parker's goals rather than a...
You could watch that now.
Take away his Bristol Rovers and Man United goals. Quick ones. Does anyone know what the other best Beckford goal? Well, then.
The other best one.
Yeah.
Well, to be honest, one of the ones that came out earlier was the goal against. I remember the goal against Chester where he'd lobbed it.
Chipped it.
Hartlepool.
Yeah. Hartlepool was pretty exceptional, wasn't it?
Penalty at Spurs in 96th, 7th minute when he blasted that in under a lot of pressure. Yeah.
There was a lot of volleys and acrobatic sort of goals.
Yeah. Though, you'd be banging your head. You'd be like, Bex just told the ball. Bouncing off him. Like, Bex. Oh, well done, mate. Yeah. just scored for 25 yards.
Yeah, it's like that. Kid, everyone will play with one of the kids at school. They just dribble around every go, pass. Oh, yeah, good goal.
Yeah,
well done. Hopefully we'll see Steve Morrison finally back in the net. What we are doing is seeing Sam Byram, who Ben has converted, although there's been a lot, you know, he has played in this position before, when Neil Warnock, you know, in a sort of a 4-4-2, but moving further up the pitch, you went back.
Yeah.
Sam's going forward in terms of that position, but I don't know how easy is it to transfer and how good do you think Sam Byram is at that position? Will he end up being a right back or is this going to be his position?
Well, when you're calling on the next Gareth Bale from
hold on a second.
So we're talking about pressure, aren't we? And calling him the new Gareth Bale.
But... If he doesn't go for more than £100 million at some point, he's failed as a footballer.
No, but I think, as we've obviously
not my,
seen this
Not
season,
my words, by the way, other people's, not my words.
As we've seen, is Marlon capable of making that transition? What I think people find hard doing from moving full-back to further forward is obviously when you're at full-back, all the game's in front of you, so it's easier for you to step in. As attacking full-back, you're easier for you to step in. When you go to the wing, you're receiving half the possession with your back to goal and your defender will be your backside, so you have to play backwards. But so I think Sam's taking it duck to water and just shows you his ability he's got for him to adapt to a position like he's played there all his life. I think you said, Ben, you could put him in a position apart from keeper and he'd still excel at it just because he's got a great footballing brain. Right. And obviously he's an hard working lad, he works hard at his training off field stuff as well, and it's shown his performances, because it's no fluke how well he's performing at the moment, because he has had some injury problems that probably people don't know too much about. He does struggle from time to time, so he's got that to manage, and thankfully he has done, and obviously we're seeing him kicking on, which we all hoped he would have done after his first season.
Yeah, top player, scored in both of Leeds United's back-to-back away victories at Huddersfield and last night as well, and certainly enjoyed the celebrations at the end of the game. He's been playing. Who else is impressing you at the moment during this run, Stephen? I'll go to you first. Who else is
Austin?
Yeah,
just for the fact that he's just like a rampaging lunatic, isn't he? But he does it. He gets the crowd going, driving on, winning the ball in midfield, running. And you do know that when he goes over, generally, he has been fouled. Yeah. He's one of these, he tries to count referee, and because he's bustling people off the ball, when he does go over, 9 times out of 10, gets the free kick, because the ref must think, oh, well, he must have been fouled because he's gone over.
It's a good point, that. When I detach myself at Elland Road, if you watch when Austin gets the ball, and it's a bit impulsive when he starts on them runs, you can feel the crowd and the ground kind of get sucked in on it, because they're thinking, go on, Rudy, you know, do something. He does have that kind of cavalier crazy effect when he gets
the ball. The Reading, people who work for the local radio station in Reading last night, they were saying they really hoped Austin wasn't playing. Other clubs get really worried about him. Yeah. But I think he can be as frustrating as anyone else. Ben, what about you? Who else is sort of impressing you?
I say it every time, Tom, but he keeps us in games, does Sylvester.
He does.
He keeps them, you know, he's done it.
That's his key.
He's his union here, isn't it?
Sticking together, aren't they, the keepers?
Yeah, he's done it past few home games this calendar year, hasn't he? We've been 0-0, 1-0, and he's made some really good would say.
He loves those one-on-one situations, as I think all keepers do, but he's also coming for some stick, Ben, Huddersfield.
They don't like coming for corners, does
he? No, he doesn't. No.
Well, we had this conversation earlier in the season where we were saying, would you actually drop him? But we said he's a young keeper coming from a foreign country. Yeah. You're going to expect him to come up with the odd mistake here and there. But I think if you put together his good points and his bad points, I think the good points will probably outweigh the bad stuff at the moment. So I think it's proven to be a decent
that,
keeper.
Cooper coming, being made captain, which is a big thing for a lad of his age and clubs he's played for, to be made captain of Leeds United. He seems to have coped with it fine. He looks a steady number. And then Lewis Cook and Byram have been fantastic. And as we've said, Murphy and Morrison.
Charlie Taylor as well, defensively.
Yeah, Charlie Taylor's probably got lost because of resurgence of Byram in this new position. And Lewis Cook, he deserves everything he said. But Charlie Taylor now, he's a regular in team sheet.
And everything he knows from this man here, Ben Parker, everything he knows. But he's somebody who's been talked about a long time, but now he's really going to bed in because he doesn't really have that much competition either in the squad for that position.
But he's playing well, isn't he? I'm sure there's another kid that could come through academy if he were playing poorly, and Neil could, you know, knock him out at a team. But he deserves it. He's playing really well. It just seems to keep everything so simple for me when I watch him. He don't look overawed by playing against good championship teams or in front of, you know, pretty decent crowds at Elland Road. Looks really comfortable.
A lot of buzz about him, wasn't there, Ben? For a long time, for years.
Yeah. Even going back to when Neil Thompson were in charge of the academy, then he was saying, like, look, Ben, you best up your game because this lad's coming through. Someone don't be putting this pressure on me. I've just got a team.
His 8-year-old looks
like him. Yeah. He'll be running rings around you, Ben, soon. To be fair to Chaz, not a lot of the young players go out and get games out on loan, and fair play
was successful on loan. You're getting promoted
especially
at Wembley.
Last year, but he did have a couple of spells where he didn't do too. I didn't play too many games. I think Bradford, York, he went up to Scotland, and people are starting to wonder because we all knew at Leeds he was such a good player, but he went out on loan and probably not showing his capabilities. Yeah. But like I say, last year he went to Fleetwood, and I think that made him really grow up, moving away from home. Training there and like saying playing at Wembley, winning at Wembley, so he's come back. He's had to wait for his chance, but I think it's a great point that him being unnoticed in a team like he has done as a young lad. I think it's a good compliment to himself. Like he's gone unnoticed. You won't say, oh God, he's standing out. He's like a bit of a liability there. He's actually just breezing through games, and he'll only get better. Will Chaz
mentioned? We've mentioned almost everybody. What about B&B at the back last night? Bamba and Belushi.
B&B.
Saul Bamba's. He's one of those guys. Instant sort of. I'm not going to say cult hero stage, but there's something about him, isn't there?
I thought as soon as we signed him, I thought he's going to be like Sam Sodji.
Yeah, that's exactly the comparison I made. I thought he's pretty fearless, but again, having had a couple of conversations with Saul Bamba, he's such a presence, and naturally because he's 6'5", but he's got a great way about him. You know, I think he's perfect for the squad.
And a Scottish accent.
The weird Scottish. There's a bit of Italian in there now, and a bit of East Midlands or whatever, but. I think he's coming in, he's made a massive impact. He's a real towering sort of presence at the back, and I don't know if he had an effect on Belushi last night, but Belushi, I've not been a big fan of him at all.
No.
He takes far too many chances. I don't know what his big strengths are.
I don't think he's up to Silvestri at times.
No, he hasn't. But I don't know whether playing alongside Bamba last night did
something
to his game.
I know.
Well, I think this might have helped with people playing well. It's competition for places then. Obviously, when Belushi's coming, think if I didn't play well tonight, Cooper's captain, we've got Bamba here, I wouldn't find myself sitting on the bench. So obviously, it ups everyone's game. You've got to play well or you're out of the team.
Well, now you think turning our attentions to Saturday's game against Millwall, it's difficult for Neil Redfern to change it. Even if Cooper's going to be out, but even if he was back, you'd expect it to be pretty difficult for him to change
good,
the team.
Competition's good, isn't it? It brought something about it. It does have that kind of. I remind me a bit of Zaliukas, where 1 minute he'll do it so easy, you'll think, my God, he should have played and won a World Cup. And other times you'll sit there and you'll just have your head in your hands thinking, oh dear, dear, mate.
The best thing is, last night I was watching it and think, you know how like two central midfielders would have an understanding, so right, so if you go, I'll just drop back a little, I'll cover you. And likewise, vice versa. You don't expect that from centre-backs. Because there was a time when Bamba went on this little marauding run to the halfway line, almost lost it twice. And Belushi went, oh, well, I can't go forward. And then Belushi did the same thing, and Bamba was thinking, well, what are you doing? Like, that's my job. I'm the centre-back who runs 30 yards in the opposition half.
But when I watched him on Saturday, I focused on him for a while just to see how he played.
Better player, Ben.
He seemed really intelligent. You could tell he'd played football for a lot of years at a decent level, because his positional sense, and Ben will know, which is what you do off ball. That's sometimes probably more important where
you are when you're not in possession.
And I watched where he was around Park, and he had it all. He knows what he's doing. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And he's a big lad. No centre half's going to want to come out. You know, Millwall centre forward on Saturday in cold coming in and playing against him. You're going to think, dear, do you know what I mean?
Big Bamba.
He's a big lad, isn't he?
He'll be
big
Bamba. Gregory from Halifax again. Well, coming up against him, Halifax last year. So
interesting game this weekend. Millwall, and it was quite interesting. Someone had said in the press conference to Neil Redfern this week, "Oh, it's a big game this at Reading." And he said, "Well, I've sat here every week, and you've said it's a big game. They're all massive games, but given the way the league table is, and given the fact that Nottingham Forest are 1-0 up against Wigan, by the way, at half time tonight, which is a big scoreline, because if Wigan lose, there's a case that the bottom two have definitely gone, unless they go on some kind of amazing run. So then we've got Millwall in 22nd on 30 points, Brighton the same above them, Charlton, who are dropping like a stone, who would be my tip to possibly get relegated if Millwall can get their act together, 33 points, Rotherham 33, Fulham 35, then Leeds 35, Cardiff 36, Huddersfield, Reading, Bolton and Forest are all on 37. Obviously, a Forest win tonight takes them up to 40. But you'd have to say everybody up to Bolton are still in the mix. No,
realistically, I went higher earlier, but looking at deeper now, for me, I'm not just saying this. It's Fulham and below, because bottom two are rooted. They're rudderless and useless. Yeah. Millwall are not firing at all. Brighton could maybe get out of it, because they can play some nice football at times, and at home they'd probably have some. Charlton probably will be next one. Rotherham, they're not that good. The new divisions, they could struggle. And Fulham, they just don't seem to have a right lot. And whereas like Brighton or Leeds at home, when they're in trouble, could get fans behind them, and actually you could fancy them to do something. I don't think Fulham have that kind of passion, momentum, where if chips were down and they were in trouble, you know, would they get a full house and really get behind and dig 3 points out at home? I don't think Fulham have that kind of setup there, which is worrying.
I think from Leeds' point of view, albeit you look, the gap between the bottom three, like with Millwall, is still 5 points.
That's it. It's been a big 5 points a while, yeah.
But we've dragged more teams. And now we're talking, instead of talking 2-3 teams with Leeds included in that, we're talking half of the division now, aren't we? We could even, you could go, like we've said, Sheffield Wednesday, they're only nine points. Yeah. It's like, it doesn't sound much at all. Wigan are 8 points to get out, so 9 points ahead.
If we were nine points behind playoff places, we'd say, we've got a right chance of doing that.
Three wins.
So we're talking about hard division now. So from a Leeds point of view, to not drag, but get more teams involved, obviously benefits themselves, because it's taking less pressure off us, is putting more pressure on other teams around for them to win, so we can just go about our own business instead of trying to worry about other teams.
So therefore, Ben, when you're building up to a game against Millwall, and managers and players will say at the press, just another game, it's the next match, it is important, but it's just it's another 3 points on offer. Behind closed doors, are the players this week going, Millwall, if we beat them, we're almost effectively, you could say, we're not really in a fight. It's a big game, isn't it?
Biggest game of season for me. You've got to be beating teams in and around you, especially the teams that are in bottom three. And to make that gap up to 8 points, it's a massive, not only to win the game to get the 3 points, but also a psychological point of view, because you could actually crush Millwall's hopes there, because they'd be looking at themselves, Leeds, we can see getting close gaps, 2 points to Leeds, trying to drag ourselves out. But Leeds will be looking at it. This is a massive game, Elland Road against Millwall. We can make that point, it's 8 points. It's a great cushion then, and we can start kicking on.
And looking at that, Ben, as well, hopefully we win 3 or 4-0, Millwall's goal difference ain't right pretty at the minute either, is it?
Is he getting to Easter's end of season
kind of time?
The only thing for Millwall is the last two away matches, they've gone to Forest and won 1-0, which whatever people say about Forest, I still think it's a good result when you go there and win. And they went to Birmingham last night and won 1-0, so away from home, maybe something's changed a little bit.
They were crushed
against Huddersfield at home. They just collapsed apparently on Saturday. They lost. So I don't know. I don't know whether they'll. I mean, likewise, Leeds will be saying it's a big game, but Millwall, they'll be saying, "Wow, if we get this win, we're pulling Leeds to within 2 points." So
that puts a marker out for them. I think Millwall, like, they've been erratic, but I think if we score first on Saturday, I think they'll collapse again like they did against Huddersfield in second half. If we score it first 25 minutes, crowd against Millwall will obviously be right behind us. I think they could really...
I think it's one of those games we can't lose.
Yeah, no, you can't lose it. Yeah, no.
Yeah.
If we win it, it's fantastic. If we lose it...
Yeah, but also I don't think we can go into that
you can't
game
go into
with
that
with that, yeah, with yeah, that mentality. Is thinking
you go out
we
to
can.
Win game,
yeah.
You yeah. get bored.
I just think, just treat it, say it ahead another game, but it's, for me, the biggest game of the season. Uh-huh. Just go out, all guns blazing, try and blow them out of the park the first 25 minutes, try and just... blow them out of the park with your work rate, your high tempo. What Redders will be probably working on, what we've seen the last few weeks, if we apply ourselves correctly, worry about ourselves, we should be too much for Millwall, anyway.
They've no backing, have they? They don't bring them any, so...
Wednesday Night Live on Radio Yorkshire.